All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, this is Tony's Political Ramblings. So happy new year. This is the first episode of TPR in 2022. I'm happy that all of you are out here to join me for another year of excellent, excellent podcasts. But we're going to start today, of this first episode of 2022 with a cautionary tale, a cautionary episode. And really, this is something that sprung up for me personally over the holidays and something that I've been grappling with over the last several months as I'm seeing some of my childhood friends start to become radicalized and turn more to political extremes. I'm not going to say which political extreme. However, given the content of this podcast, you might be able to make your own assumptions. But I remember them as kids, and none of them were really like that. So it's something that I'm starting to experience and see happen, how people become more violent and aggressive and angry over the interactions that I have with them through whether social media or in person or the other or any such interaction. And I see this, and it's got me to the conclusion that no one sets out to be a Nazi. That's the title of this episode, and I think it's the real thesis that this whole episode is going to follow. No one sets out to be a Nazi. No one wakes up when no one's born and wants to go perpetuate hate and violence and fear throughout the world and throughout their nation or their local community. But at a certain point, it happens. And it's happened a lot with millions and millions and millions of people, billions likely, over the centuries. And so primarily, what my rudimentary understanding of this and how this happens is it happens in one of two ways. Education, quote, or indoctrination, but education I'm just going to use since it's a less charged word, and then radicalization. And those are the two means that I see it happening, two patterns that I see unfolding in terms of people getting pushed further and further to violent, more extreme ways of political expression. And so the first one I want to go into is education, and I'm going to look at that in the context of the post-Civil War South in the United States. Now, as we all know, very clearly, the main contributing factor to the Southern states seceding from the Union and starting a war with the United States of America was concerning the right of Southern individuals to own human beings as slaves. That is one of the main fundamental crucial reasons that not only prominent individuals, but states themselves cited as the reason for their secession. There's no debating that. However, if I said that statement in Florida, at certain parts of Florida, Georgia, Alabama, you're going to be met with a bit of a violent response, or at least an aggressive response, or maybe an eyebrow raise, something along those lines. And that is by product of generations of education, quote, of telling the, quote, truth of how the Civil War came to be and really what the South's role in that was. And so this is primarily responsible, the group's primarily responsible for this, the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and another group with former Confederate veterans. This effort didn't come about till the 1890s through the 1910s, but a lot of the effects are still around today. Primarily, the United Daughters of the Confederacy were concerned with retelling the history for why the South got in the Civil War. And not only that, but memorializing and honoring Confederate war heroes. That's why really groups like the United Daughters of the Confederacy are the reason why Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, for example, are very prominent names in American history, even though they were the ones who were on the side of the of the villains of the story, if you will, the ones that turned their guns on the United States. Fundamentally, that's what happened. There's really no sugarcoating it. Robert E. Lee and the Army of Northern Virginia turned their guns on the United States. That's what happened. However, if you look for the United Daughters of the Confederacy and some of the revised textbooks, that's not the story you'll hear. The piece that won't involve slavery, you won't hear that either. In fact, let me pull the six core tenets of the Lost Cause, which was put forth by the United Daughters of the Confederacy and other groups of the time. Number one, secession, not slavery, caused the Civil War. Number two, African Americans were, quote, faithful slaves, loyal to their masters and the Confederate cause, and unprepared for the responsibilities of freedom. Number three, the Confederacy was defeated militarily only because of the Union's overwhelming advantages in men and resources. Number four, Confederate soldiers were heroic and saintly. Number five, the most heroic and saintly of all Confederates, perhaps of all Americans, was Robert E. Lee. And number six, Southern women were loyal to the Confederate cause and sanctified by the sacrifice of their loved ones. Now, obviously, all six of these are false. But that narrative, those core principles were put forth in the South and are still put forth in the South. And it's been that way for over a century. The efforts to rewrite history have created this antagonism from individuals in the South against the United States, the federal government, black people most often, black Americans, over whom the war was fought fundamentally, and really just a distrust in institutions in general that we see play out today. And you even have this sort of ideology bleeding into constitutional interpretation. If you look at a lot of originalists, their judicial opinions will often overlook the Reconstruction Amendments. Those are the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments that came out right after the Civil War. The 13th was during the Civil War, but that was the constitutional amendment that prohibited slavery. The 14th was equal protection under the law, and that's the big one. And 15, the big one in terms of Supreme Court cases over the years, cases like Roe v. Wade, Brown versus Board of Education, relied on the 14th Amendment. But originalists tend to overlook that one and not put as much importance on the 14th Amendment. And the 15th was the right to vote that was not discriminated and infringed upon by anyone's race or color or previous enslaved status. And so this revisionist idea of the Lost Cause and the United Daughters of the Confederacy putting this narrative forward that the South were victims of the war and not the instigators creates this hate and tension. And this is just one example in the U.S. that of a hate and tension that's evolved through, quote, education of the people. So that's the main way. That's just one case study of how that happens. That's the main way for education. And that happens at young ages, and it's the same sort of pattern you saw with the Hitler Youth, Mao's Red Guard, and the Komsomol out in Russia. They were all youth branches that were targeted for this ideological piece that radicalized them and made them more extreme and loyal to whatever cause they were advocating for. Now, the second major pathway that I have seen individuals take in order to become these radical, extreme, political actors is through radicalization. And this, I have linked a piece here from the Washington Post that talks about Ari Kringansky, I hope I have that name right, and their three pillars of radicalization and what needs to happen for a person to be radicalize. And so the first is creating a significance, meaning in life. Oftentimes, people who are radicalized and indoctrinated don't have a sense of meaning or significance in their life. So they find it through these radical organizations. Second would be a narrative that justifies the use of violence or extreme behavior. And I'll get into this in a moment. And once I've outlined the third here. And the third is going to be a sort of community and network that follows from those interactions. And it's sort of tied to the significance piece, but it's more of a community-oriented approach as opposed to an individual sense of meaning, where this one is more of like a connection to other people. And so if you look at this in the context of the MAGA movement, that is the current movement that's still going on in the United States, it's a right-wing, authoritarian type branch of American of Republicanism that has seemed to be one of the more dominating groups in terms of the current Republican Party. But if you'll see who their primary demographics are, and this is, again, I'm going to link this study, this other study here in this in the bio here, is that this organization found that, a research study found that the overwhelming majority of MAGA movement members are overwhelmingly white, male, Christian, retired, and over 65 years old. And so when you look at it in the context of that, you have typically older men who aren't working anymore. And so their sense of significance and meaning in life is sort of dwindled. And in addition to that, too, you have, I'm going to link this other study as well, is that men typically have fewer friends than women do, fewer close friends. And it's kind of an interesting thing, but especially as the men get older, they tend to have fewer and fewer close friends. So they start to feel lonely and isolated, and this takes years off of their lives, literally. They live shorter lives because of this loneliness. And again, I'll link that here in the bio. But you have that too, where you have individuals who are lonely, not working, and older, who are losing their connections in life and their meaning in life. They don't know where anywhere to go, so they find this significance in this group through the narrative of stuff that narratives like the Trump administration pushed, as in Mexicans were drug dealers and rapists, that the country was being stolen by socialists and communists, and the older people were able to use this narrative to join these groups, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, these groups of this nature. And through these groups, they were able to form a sense of community. And so all three of the pillars seem to be met here by the MAGA movement here in the United States. You know, poor, isolated, lonely individuals are able to take up this narrative that their country is being corrupted by minorities and gay people and transgendered people. And they're able to take that narrative and justify group action that will build a sense of community around this sort of victimhood and group action, the savior complex that exists within these organizations. And this radicalization happens through very subtle means. I'm going to link another study here. It's often through propaganda. That's Facebook, disinformation articles, music, books. I would even argue personally shows like The Daily Wire. That's a Ben Shapiro's radio show, and Tucker Carlson, and really most of all of Fox News. They radicalize their own viewers through the social bonds that these groups offers, as I've gone to. And also by some sort of traumatic incident that happens in their lives, some sort of meaning, maybe not traumatic necessarily, but some sort of meaningful, shocking incident, and they list several different options. Some of them include interactions with people of other races. And so I wanted to focus, though, on social media. And that's the cautionary piece of this episode, because simply in 2016 alone, this Pyrrhus data set, which focuses on nationalists and extremists, 90% of extremists in the Pearis data set in 2016 were radicalized in some form or another over social media. So the point is here is that this can happen to anyone. People get roped in with targeted advertisements, particularly with the Trump campaign in 2016 that used very personalized ads through compromising Facebook data to get people to vote for Trump and to radicalize them, to talk bad about Mexicans and Mexican Americans and gay people and black Americans in the United States, gay Americans. It used this very targeted advertisement, this targeted advertisement format to radicalize individuals. And it's very easy in this world to be misled, to believe someone else's doctrine, to take up someone else's lies and make them your personal truth. So it's important, I would say more now than ever, to be mindful of where you get your news, what you think, your biases, to check your biases at the door, and to really look at the world how it really is. Because there are a lot of individuals, like some of my childhood friends, and they didn't set out on this path. They just happened to stumble on it. And they were radicalized from there. So as I've said before, and especially going forward now in the new year of 2022, I ask all of you to remain mindful of what you do and what you say and what you think.